SCP-4504, The Handless Man. The Foundation dies so that you may live in the light. That's the common motto that they like to throw out there to let us know how much the Foundation sacrifices for the sake of normalcy among the common people. But they're certainly not the only ones suffering. Humanoid anomalies have pretty much always had a bit of a tragic history in containment, and SCP-4504 isn't any different. Getting yanked off the streets, especially for doing nothing wrong, and then being forced into a cell for the rest of your life, is a very hard pill to swallow. SCP-4504 is a reasonable guy, but he's experienced some very unreasonable things. Let's take a look. We're provided a series of documents related to SCP-4504 from across a number of years, starting with the current version of its SCP file. 4504 is a 35-year-old Chinese-Australian man named Dennis Wong, who, as a result of his use of his anomalous abilities on himself, stands 2.64 meters tall, or nearly 9 feet, and has distorted features and greatly elongated limbs. These distortions render him resistant to both kinetic impacts and extreme pain, and he is also missing both of his hands as a result of an encounter with SCP-082, Fernand the Cannibal, during a previous containment breach. He is capable of manifesting two invisible hands at the ends of his arms, which warp space, allowing him to mold solid objects he touches with them as if they were only semi-solid. He can manipulate any solid physical substance he touches with them, including glass, stone, steel, lead, beryllium bronze, and flesh, as they distort the space containing the substance as opposed to acting on the substance itself. Affected substances are rendered sturdier and more solid than they once were, making them difficult to break or damage with kinetic strikes. He cannot interact with solid objects with his manifested hands without distorting them, although they have reduced effect on non-solids, such as liquids or gases. Currently, there is no known way to reverse these distortions in space, and attempts by Dennis to repair affected areas simply create a second, overlapping distortion. Staff and test subjects whose bodies have been affected by him report extreme chronic pain to the affected area, although the areas of flesh will continue to function as normal unless the distortion disconnects parts of the subject's body or exposes internal organs. Foundation medical staff have found conventional painkillers to be only partially effective in mitigating the subsequent pain. Dennis readily admits to a deep-seated hatred of the Foundation, particularly his security personnel and past psychiatrists. He has repeatedly expressed a desire to escape containment, and so far has attempted to do so 83 times, resulting in 4 successful escapes. During his more recent containment breaches, he has not attempted to flee the facility, but instead seeks out and maims specific members of Foundation staff he bears a grudge against. These have typically been senior security officers who have made decisions about his containment he objects to, such as restricting his contact with other humanoid SCPs, interfering with his painkiller regimen, or revoking his leisure privileges. To date, he has not harmed a member of on-site medical staff with the exception of his own psychiatrists, and has discouraged other humanoid SCPs from doing so during containment breaches. We then move on to the earliest available document, from 9 years prior. Here, Dennis has the Euclid class instead of Keter, and it's noted that, to date, he has not harmed a member of Foundation staff. As a result of good behavior, he is currently allowed socialization and leisure privileges. The description states that he is a 25-year-old man standing a much more normal 1.77 meters tall. And he possesses the ability to warp space with his hands, molding solid objects as if they were semi-solid. He can manipulate any solid substance he touches with them, including glass, stone, steel, and flesh, with beryllium bronze being redacted at this point. It also states that he has refused to participate in testing on human subjects. He was acquired by the Foundation in March of 2008, after receiving a report of several small spatial distortions in a shed in suburban Brisbane. The property's landlord directed agents to Dennis, who had lived there previously. When apprehended by agents, he entered Foundation custody willingly and without resistance, believing them to be agents of the Australian Security Intelligence Organization. We're given an excerpt from a psychiatric interview between Dennis and Dr. Weber, performed around a month after his containment. Dennis was reporting good mental health at this time, and often used these interviews to make formal requests regarding his containment. Dennis says that he's really grateful to them for keeping him safe like this, as they had explained to him that there were other groups out there that could be dangerous, like the GOC or Marshall Carter and Dark. He gets that the P in SCP stands for protecting him as much as protecting the world from dangerous people like him. Dr. Weber just says that they cannot give him permission to leave, causing Dennis to exclaim. He understands why he can't contact his family, as they have to protect normality or whatever, but they can't keep him locked up like this, as he needs to be outside. Weber offers up more time in the exercise area, but Dennis rejects this and aggressively leans out of his seat, causing security staff to instruct him to sit back down. He complies, but says that the yard sucks, as he just stands there on some astroturf and runs around in circles for an hour or two. He's still surrounded by four concrete walls, and still standing on concrete no matter how much fake plastic they layer on top of it. He's also still being stared at by the same prison guards with guns, and says that it's depressing. He wants to go somewhere where he can see the horizon, feel real grass under his feet, see an actual tree instead of a potted plant in his room. Even if it's just security walking him around the outside of the facility or something. He's not a criminal, and shouldn't be treated like this. Weber just apologizes and says that they simply cannot take the risk, before offering up the alternative of painting a horizon mural on the inside of the wall. Dennis swears and tries to insist that it'll be perfectly fine if he can just go out for an hour or two, and he'll do exactly as the guards say. But Weber still says that it's simply not possible. The interview concludes, and he was escorted back to his cell. Shortly thereafter, he used his art supplies to deface the wall of his cell with the words, "You're here forever." He was subsequently ordered to remove the vandalism by security staff, but per the advice of Dr. Weber, the exercise area was closed for 3 days, while staff painted a mural resembling the horizon on two walls. We're then given a test log, in which Dennis is instructed to demonstrate his anomaly on a living pig. Dennis hesitates until he's reminded that if he doesn't comply, he will be reprimanded. He eventually relents and approaches the restrained pig, placing his hand on its thigh and pushing into it. The pig immediately begins screaming and thrashing against its restraints, and Dennis retreats to the far corner of the room. The pig continues to scream, struggling hard enough to shake the table, and Dennis has to shout over it to request to leave the testing chamber. He's instead told to approach the table again, to touch the subject, and push his hand into its brain. Dennis expresses distress over this and asks to leave the chamber. But he's told that if he doesn't comply, he'll be reprimanded. He approaches the table and moves to place his hand on the pig's head, but it turns and bites his hand. He cries out and retreats, and staff cancel the test. Afterwards, en route to the infirmary, he reported feeling faint and lost consciousness, likely due to the security staff following containment procedures and placing him in the special Midas water cuffs, which prevented him from putting pressure on his wound. The research team was reprimanded for improperly restraining the test subject. In November of 2010, Dennis breached containment during a socialization meeting in the site's cafeteria, along with two other SCPs. Over the next 20 minutes, he was able to breach walls and floors using his anomaly, freeing 13 other humanoid SCP objects. Although almost all were recontained, he and four other SCPs breached containment and escaped the site. During the breach, he refused to use his anomaly on security staff, even in situations where he would have directly benefited from it. He also attempted to discourage other humanoid SCPs from harming staff, although this was ineffective in the case of two of them, resulting in 16 casualties among site staff. Mobile Task Force Epsilon 10, Manhunters, have been assigned to pursue the escaped anomalies. The next version of the file is from 2013, detailing that Dennis's containment cell should be interwoven with a grid of live electrical wires, permanently charged with the same voltage as a standard-issue taser. When Dennis breached containment, along with two other SCPs, he evaded containment for 7 months. Because of this, he's denied socialization privileges, although leisure privileges may be provided to him dependent on good behavior. Immediately after being returned to containment, after being recontained, he attempted to breach containment again by breaking through a wall, despite having been informed of the new measures in place. He received a painful shock and was subdued with pepper spray. The following day, he attempted it again, with the same result, so the site director informed security staff to only intervene if he actually manages to leave his cell. Over the course of the next 5 days, he attempted to leave 9 more times, requiring multiple treatments for second-degree electrical burns. On the 6th day, while in transit to his first session with a staff psychiatrist, he attempted to breach containment again by assaulting his security officers and fleeing while restrained with the Midas water cuffs. He was swiftly subdued with pepper spray and physical force. He was treated for a concussion and 2 fractured ribs. While attending a session with Dr. Weber a couple of weeks later, he became emotionally unstable and aggressive, and was subdued again with pepper spray and physical force. He was treated for a broken nose and a dislocated shoulder. Sometime later, Dennis submits a couple of requests, the first being for the holes in his cell to be repaired, as the electrical wires often spark loudly, causing him anxiety and difficulty falling asleep. The request is denied, however, as they don't have another cell to hold him while the repairs are done, and the chance is too great that this is just another attempt to breach containment. His second request is the reinstatement of his socialization privileges, as it would be greatly beneficial to his mental health. This request is also denied, due to him breaching containment in the past with the assistance of other humanoid SCPs. He'll have to content himself with conversations with security staff and his assigned psychiatrist. The psychiatric report log from Dr. Weber states that Dennis presents with depressed mood, irritability, psychomotor impairment, chronic fatigue, chronic insomnia, decreased interest in leisure activities, and significant weight loss. He is formally diagnosed with major depressive disorder and prescribed a daily regimen of antidepressants. Another report from a month and a half later, however, states that he is refusing to take his antidepressants, including refusing to eat any food that could contain them. He continues to insist that restoration of his socialization privileges would be more beneficial for his mental health than antidepressants. Dr. Weber's attempts to convince him otherwise have fallen on deaf ears. Another test was performed, with Dennis being instructed to test his anomaly on a restrained D-class. He complied due to staff offering the return of his socialization privileges in exchange. In the testing chamber, he initially hesitates, and the D-class exclaims for him not to comply, but Dennis ultimately approaches him. He pushes 2 fingers into the back of the D-class's hand, causing him to swear and scream in extreme pain, as Dennis apologizes. The researchers then instruct him to push his fingers into the D-class's forehead, although both Dennis and the D-class say that the test should be discontinued. The researchers disagree, once again reminding him that if he doesn't comply, his socialization privileges won't be restored. Dennis complies, pushing 2 fingers into the D-class's forehead, causing him to scream non-stop, even as Dennis removes his fingers and leaves the testing chamber. The D-Class was observed for the next 72 hours, during which he reported being in extreme chronic pain that was as strong as when it first occurred, although he states that his thought process and cognitive capacity were unimpeded. He did suffer from insomnia due to the pain, and was unable to sleep even with pain and somnic medications. After 72 hours, he requested euthanization, which was granted. During a psychiatric interview with Dr. Weber, Weber notes that he's received reports that Dennis has ceased cutting his hair and nails. He asks why, as self-care is important, and Dennis says that the security officers are worried that he's growing his nails longer because he's trying to increase how far he can reach or something, but it's because of something else. Weber asks what that thing is, but Dennis says that there's no point, as he wouldn't understand, and that's part of what makes him a shit psychiatrist. He asks if he's ever read The Handmaid's Tale, and says that how long his hair and nails are is one of the few things he has control over anymore. Dr. Weber replies that he understands that Dennis feels that way, but perhaps he should consider allowing the nursing staff to trim them, as they are rather unhygienic. Dennis just sighs for 3 seconds in response. A few weeks later, while in his cell, Dennis used his anomaly on himself, bending the tip of one of his fingernails. He was careful to avoid the tip of his finger so as to not distort his own flesh, and security staff believe that this is the reason why he has been refusing to allow medical staff to cut his hair or nails, so he can test to see if he can use his anomaly on his own body. The senior security officer recommends that medical staff cut his nails at the next opportunity, but the senior nurse cannot authorize it. The nature of his anomaly makes interacting with his hands without his consent unwise at best. If left alone, it's likely that his nails will break on their own, or he'll ask staff to assist in cutting his nails. 2 months later, Dennis was overheard at lunch discussing the layout of the site with another SCP, at which point he was immediately removed from the cafeteria, and his socialization privileges were rescinded. The next day, while being transported to his psychiatric session, he covertly used his anomalous ability on himself, stretching out the ring finger on his right hand. Once his finger was approximately 45 centimeters long, he used it to breach the Midas cuffs and slashed both security officers, killing them. He then extended the finger to over 1.3 meters long and proceeded to the nearby humanoid containment cells. He maimed and killed the security officers there and freed the SCPs there, initiating a site-wide containment breach. Although most of the anomalies were recaptured, Dennis once again fled the facility along with 3 others. MTF Epsilon 10 was once again assigned to pursue them. The next version of the file is from 2017, with Dennis now having the Keter object class, although the containment procedures and description have both been corrupted. Dennis had been recontained shortly after his last escape, and we're given another interview between him and Dr. Weber, in which Dennis exclaims that he can't take it anymore. Weber tries to tell him that he has to be mindful of his mental illness, causing Dennis to punch the table and yell that he doesn't have depression, he just hasn't talked to another human being in 3 years. He spends all day, every day, locked in a tiny little concrete room, and the only people he ever sees are the guards who bring him his food. He can't remember the last time he got to talk to someone who listens, or the last time he saw the sky. He's been standing on concrete constantly since he was first locked up, which he can't even remember how long it's been. Animals at the zoo are treated better than him. Weber tells him that he's being irrational, as he has plants in his room and other leisure privileges, but Dennis counters that 3 potted plants and an Xbox don't make up for a total lack of human contact. Weber tries to calm him down, but after Dennis asks to go back to his cell and Weber tells him that they have 20 minutes left, Dennis flips the table, causing the security officers to pepper spray and tase him. Weber puts in a request on Dennis's behalf for thicker softer-soled slippers and soft carpeted mats for his containment cell. He has stated that he has developed chronic foot pain as a result of standing on the site's concrete floors, and Weber believes that granting this request will assist with his mental health. The site director grants the request. The following day, however, after being given the mats and slippers, Dennis moved to the wall of his containment cell and attempted a containment breach. He touched a live wire, hesitated, and then touched it 6 more times. Security officers entered the cell and subdued him with pepper spray, as he repeatedly vocalized that he wanted to die. He was transported to the infirmary and treated for second-degree burns before being returned to his cell, with security officers being told to respond immediately if he attempted to harm himself or breach containment again. An emergency meeting with Dr. Weber was arranged immediately. During the meeting, Dennis remains silent, as Weber tells him that this is very serious and he wants to help. Dennis then states that he is formally requesting the right to die, to which Weber replies that he is formally placing him on suicide watch. Security officers will check on him every half hour to confirm that he's okay and that he isn't preparing for another attempt. He's also increasing their sessions to be weekly while he's dealing with this, and he'll be given a regimen of antidepressants. A couple of weeks later, Weber asks if he's taking the medications, to which Dennis says that he is not, and he has another problem. He's been thinking about offing himself for ages now. That was just the first time he was upset enough to try. Weber tells him that he cannot keep things like that to himself, and he has to talk about them. Dennis tells him not to interrupt him, as it's hard to concentrate, to which Weber asks what the devil is the matter with him, which seems unprofessional. Dennis says that it's the guards coming in every half hour to check on him, shouting at him and making him answer them. They come in every half an hour, even when he's trying to sleep, and he hasn't gotten more than half an hour's sleep for a week. Weber says that he's sorry to hear that, but these measures are necessary for his safety. He should try the medications, and once he feels better, they'll take him off the watch. Dennis says that the meds won't work, as it's not him, it's this place. Weber tells him that that's simply not true, and he can't keep using his mental health to try and breach containment. It's clearly not healthy for him, and is only making things worse. He strongly recommends taking his medications and complying with staff directions from now on. He then asks how the slippers and mat are, and Dennis disorientedly replies that they're really great. A week later, during another interview, Dennis says that he's feeling freaking amazing, as he's been taking the meds and they've really helped. Weber is glad to hear it, and Dennis continues to say that Weber is really amazing, always having been there for him, and he must be the best shrink in the whole foundation. Weber pauses and tells him that there's no need for that tone of voice. Making light of the situation with sarcasm and mockery doesn't help anyone. Dennis tries to tell him that he really means it, but Weber says that for his own good, he'll have to stay on watch. Dennis exclaims that he can't sleep, he can't concentrate on anything, and he just begs to be allowed to sleep. Weber just apologizes, saying that they cannot allow him to harm himself, and strongly recommends continuing to take his medications. Dennis rises from his chair and attempts to accost Weber, but security intervenes and subdues him with pepper spray and tasers. Later that day, Dennis approached the wall of his containment cell, using his anomaly to make sustained contact with one of the live wires. Security intervened, escorting him to the infirmary to receive treatment for burns. 4 days later, Dennis did the same thing, but during transit to the infirmary, he attacked the officers escorting him. He grabbed a security officer and told the other officers that he was going to use his anomaly on her unless they shot him. The officers attempted to de-escalate the situation, but Dennis proved unresponsive, until another officer ambushed him with a taser. The officers proceeded to subdue him with tasers, pepper spray, and physical force, during which he repeatedly vocalized that they needed to terminate him. He was subsequently treated for second-degree electrical burns, 3 broken ribs, and a concussion, with the officers reporting negligible injuries. A few days later, during another interview with Dr. Weber, Dennis says that he's feeling good, all better now, and the drugs help. Weber says that that's good, but he received 2 reports this week that Dennis attempted self-harm again. Dennis just says that that was then, and this is now, and he's all better, wanting to go off the watch. Dr. Weber says that he's not sure that's a good idea, as he says he feels better, but he's still demonstrating psychomotor impairment and depressed effect. Combined with the 2 attempts, he's not sure if his mental state is all right, and he may be lying about his mental state. Dennis insists that he's not lying, and the meds have helped, leading Weber to say that the guards must have been mistaken then when they said they saw him hiding the pills in his pillow. Dennis is shocked that they know about that, but Weber just tells him that he's ill, and this is for his own good. Dennis exclaims that it's not helping, and the drugs aren't going to help. He doesn't listen, and he just makes things worse. Dennis then stands and pushes his hand through the table using his anomaly. Before security officers can react, he steps through the table and pushes his other hand into Weber's head, before removing it in a slashing motion. Most of Weber's face and cranium are removed, and security officers move in to subdue him while he stands over Weber's corpse, swearing. In the ensuing struggle, he manages to make contact with an officer with his anomaly, maiming his right hand and forearm and left leg. He is successfully subdued, however, and transported back to his cell. After being returned, he removed the mattress and sheets from his bed, leaning them against the wall beside the door into his cell. He then sat down on the bottom of the mattress with his head resting against a pillow, and proceeded to strike at any security personnel attempting to enter the room. Security personnel make 3 attempts to force entry, but this resulted in multiple officers being maimed, so they concluded that the risk in forcing their way in was too great. He proceeded to sleep in this position for the next 2 weeks, striking any personnel who entered between the hours of 9 p.m. and 6 a.m. The 5 security personnel injured were transported to the infirmary for treatment, with 4 of them having limbs amputated. Dennis later breached containment again and proceeded to rampage through the facility for 3 hours, freeing 2 dozen other humanoid SCP objects, including SCP-082, Fernand the Cannibal. Security cameras observed the 2 conversing for several minutes, during which Dennis kept his distance but bowed low to it twice, and Fernand was observed to laugh and smile several times during the conversation. When site security intervened, Dennis approached Fernand and offered up his hands, allowing him to bite cleanly through both of his wrists. Fernand was subdued, and Dennis was swiftly moved to the infirmary in critical condition. While in the infirmary, Dennis formally requests that he be reclassified from Euclid to neutralized and released from Foundation containment, reporting that he has been unable to utilize his anomaly in any form. He states that he understands that any such release would require an amnestic treatment to remove his memories of his time in containment, and he consents to such a procedure. He also does not expect an explanation or backstory for his disappearance or the loss of his hands, and will be content with a simple return to his family. Somewhat surprisingly, perhaps, this request is granted, although he is to be held in containment for 3 months to ensure that his injuries are stable and that he is truly no longer anomalous. If so, he'll be given amnestic treatment, dressed in the same manner as when he was acquired, and released in Australia a few blocks from his family's residence. Unfortunately, a week later in the infirmary, a nurse observed a small spatial distortion in the mattress of Dennis's bed, near his left hip. He quickly moved to cover it with his bedsheets and denied its existence, but relented to her inspection when she said that she'll have to call site security if he refuses. The nurse observed the anomaly and contacted security, causing Dennis to become distressed and repeatedly state that he's no longer anomalous. When security arrived, they attempted to move him back to his cell, but he resisted, continuing to insist that he's no longer anomalous, forcing them to subdue him with pepper spray and tasers. Shortly after being returned, Dennis placed the end of his right arm against the wall and used his anomaly while drawing back his arm, removing a section of the wall the approximate size and shape of his former hand. The wires contained inside the wall did not impede this motion, as they were not contacting him directly, so he repeated this motion 24 more times, tearing a hole in his cell wall and breaching containment. He proceeded to breach any other containments he found, using this new application of his anomaly to dismember and decapitate any security staff he encountered. 10 minutes later, he escaped the site along with another SCP, with MTF Epsilon 10 in pursuit. He was reacquired a week later, after reports of a homeless man with no hands. A few months later, Dennis used his anomaly on himself by placing the ends of his arms against himself and stretching his limbs and torso. Security attempted to intervene by threatening to activate the cell's halothane dispersal system, but he stated that after he woke up, he would resume his anomalous activity. Security remained outside and called for his assigned psychiatrist. During his self-mutilation, he frequently expressed severe distress and pain, starting by elongating his limbs before moving on to his own torso, neck, and head. His psychiatrist, Dr. Strickland, arrived partway through the process and attempted to negotiate with Dennis, reminding him that poor behavior would result in the revocation of his leisure privileges again. Dennis simply laughed in response, pointing out that he still hadn't regained his leisure privileges after a previous containment breach attempt. Dennis issued various threats, stating that he would kill Dr. Strickland and that he knew the Foundation had been hiding antidepressants in his food. Strickland tried to say that he and the others cared about Dennis's well-being, to which he again simply laughed. Strickland then asked why he was self-mutilating and what he thought it would accomplish, to which Dennis responded with, "Why not?" When Dennis finished his process, he breached containment using the increased reach of his arms to disable the halothane dispersal system before breaking out. His distorted body shrugged off attempts to subdue him, allowing him to kill Strickland and several security officers. He then rampaged through the facility, maiming 12 security personnel and killing 29 others, before being subdued using flashbangs, stun grenades, and halothane grenades. During another test, researchers wanted to determine the size and shape of Dennis's energy fields, which had been observed to be larger than his hands were previously. A D-class was restrained in a chair, yelling for Dennis to stay away from him, but Dennis just calmly approaches and shushes him, telling him that he won't hurt him. He then turns towards the reinforced observation window and asks the researchers if they want to see what he can do. He then rushes the window and breaches containment while laughing, killing the research team and the attending security personnel before escaping into the site. Security footage and post-mortem examination confirm that his invisible hands are enlarged to be proportionate to his new body. It's unknown if this is the result of him using his energy fields to manipulate each other, or if they have grown in proportion to the rest of him. All future testing has been prohibited by order of the site director, and information about his anomalies should instead be observed during his containment breaches to prevent future mishaps. The D-class was returned to his cell unharmed. We're then given the last version of his documentation before the current version, starting with his first interview with his new psychiatrist, Dr. Angela White. Her name causes Dennis to chuckle and remark that her parents must have been so proud of that one, but she just says that she's heard it before and calls him Dennis. But he corrects her to say that his name is SCP-4504. He hasn't been Dennis for a long time. White says that she'll keep that in mind, as treating him with respect is important to her, and she's here as his friend, causing Dennis to snort. He says that she isn't his friend. She's one of them, trying to grind him down so that he'll be a good skip and sit quietly in his little concrete box without bothering anyone. She doesn't care about his mental health. She only cares about keeping him contained. She knows what he did to his three other psychiatrists, and he asks if she's going to put him on suicide watch. She replies that according to what she read in his file, the watch was largely ineffective, was mainly used to punish him for non-compliance, and was the precipitating factor in a number of his violent episodes. So no, she doesn't think she'll be recommending it. She also won't try and hide drugs in his food, or take away his leisure privileges if he talks back. Dennis asks if she's going to listen when he says that something's wrong, or if she's going to argue and say that it's really his fault. White exclaims and says of course not, causing Dennis to say that she might be the best shrink he's ever had. She doesn't want to jinx herself, but if his other psychiatrist did that, then yes, she might be. She asks if there's anything else he wanted to ask her, and he asks if she can draw a map from here to the site director's office, with all the security patrol routes marked on it. She says no, and Dennis says that his cunning plan was foiled. Dr. White moves on, asking about his transformation, as he never really explained why he chose to mutilate himself. She can't even begin to imagine how painful a small area of his distortions must feel, and he chose to do that to his whole body. Dennis asks what she means, as he's now bulletproof and tasers bounce off him. It hurts so much he can't even feel if he gets pepper sprayed. He's stronger than any normal man, and can run faster and reach further than he ever could back when he was normal. She replies that despite that, he's never used them to escape, being more interested during breaches in hurting security staff than in actually escaping. Dennis asks where he would go, as he's 9 feet of freak. He could never hide like this, and there'd be an MTF on him so fast they'd break the land speed record. White again asks why he did it, and if giving up his chance at getting away was really worth getting back at security officers. He swears at her, saying that she's read his file, so she saw how many of those escapes were working for him before he did this to himself. White says that that's why she thought he did it, to make his breaching containment more likely. Dennis says that he kept hoping he'd get away again, as the first time he got out, he was outside for 7 months, where he could walk down a street, stand under the sky, go into shops, eat whatever he wanted, drive cars, look at trees. Then he got caught and brought back here, and the next time he only managed to stay away for 8 weeks, then 1. Now he's lucky if he gets a few hours outside of containment. By the end there, he wasn't even making it all the way off-site before he got caught and dragged back. He realized that he was never going to escape, and was going to die in this site, probably in that cell. They took everything from him. He even gave up his hands, and that didn't even get him outside. The prosthetics they give him are crap, so he has to eat food like a dog. He couldn't remember the last time he talked to someone who wasn't staff, or the last time he'd seen the sky. The one thing that they can't take from him, no matter how hard they try, the one thing he'll always be able to enjoy is vengeance. Lashing out at people who've hurt you so they hurt is something so fundamental that even dogs understand it. He had nothing to lose, and he's already hurting so bad, it's not like it could make his pain worse, so why not? White says that he made himself into a monster because he already gets treated like one. And Dennis says exactly. This way he can kill way more security, which is the only thing he gets to enjoy anymore. White mentions leisure privileges, as his file mentioned he was something of an artist, but he snorts again. Watching a TV in a dingy little room or a potted plant slowly wither and die doesn't help. How is he supposed to paint something good when he only ever sees the inside of this place? Not to mention, most of it is really awkward to use when you've got no hands. White says that she's going to recommend a review of his leisure privileges to make them more accessible and enjoyable for him, and is also going to recommend that he be awarded socialization privileges again, and that he be escorted around the outside perimeter once a week. This stuns Dennis into silence, and White says that that was something he asked for, years ago when he first joined them. A lot of his violence occurs as a result of his feelings of powerlessness and emotional distress, which are in turn caused by his social and physical isolation. She hasn't known him long, but it seems like letting him have these small privileges would vastly decrease his distress and his violent tendencies. Of course, these privileges would be contingent on his good behavior, and she can't guarantee that the site director will allow any of it, but she certainly intends to argue for it. Dennis swears and says that of course he wants that, and he'd kiss her, but he's fairly certain that that would start something with the guards. White puts in the request, and the site director agrees to review his leisure privileges, but the rest is denied, stating that there's too much chance of a flight risk with this one. White sends him an email afterwards, asking him to review his decision, stating that she believes him to be far less of a flight risk than he once was. Almost all of his violence is precipitated by feelings of isolation, powerlessness, and distress. Alleviating those would undoubtedly reduce his violent outbursts. She would also like to draw his attention to his history regarding his medication, as he never once has attempted to breach containment or harm staff while his medication was being delivered, because he understands that if he did, he would lose access to the painkillers. He has repeatedly stated that he needs to socialize with non-staff, and he needs time outside. She believes that if he fulfills these requests, he'll regard them the same way as his medications and will behave. Surprisingly, again, the site director agrees, but says that she'll have to go with him during the excursions, and he'll hold her responsible if her assessments are inaccurate. During his first excursion outside, Dennis stated that he felt anxious, and believed that this was more likely to be a part of a complex decommissioning procedure than it was to be a genuine excursion. A security sergeant informed him that it was genuine, but he would turn it into a decommissioning procedure if Dennis attempted to escape. Dennis attempted to respond with aggression, but Dr. White interrupted and calmed things down. Her and Dennis were escorted twice around the perimeter of the site over the course of an hour, during which he did not attempt to escape. The only occurrence of note was that approximately 15 minutes into it, Dennis began to weep. Seems a bit too little, a bit too late. It's certainly a tricky situation, as from the Foundation's perspective, they have a walking, thinking anomaly that, if left to his own devices, could breach the veil of normalcy at any given moment by distorting himself through walls, objects, or people. From Dennis's perspective, he did absolutely nothing wrong except being born, and was then suddenly tossed in a cold, concrete cell for the rest of his life. Obviously, the Foundation could have saved a lot of lives by just letting him walk around the perimeter for a bit when they first brought him in, but the Foundation being cold and callous is par for the course. It's a tragic story, for numerous reasons, and it doesn't exactly leave us with much hope at the end, other than offering Dennis the bare minimum of decency for the rest of his painful life. Articles like this one are why I generally say no thanks when people ask what superpower you would want if you could have any. Being able to fly for a few hours certainly isn't worth a lifetime in a government cell, and I'm sure Dennis would agree.